Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. One of the kinds of blue-green algae that turned up in the Caloosahatchee River after first blooming in Lake Okeechobee is considered to be a health hazard to humans at high enough levels. That's according to the World Health Organization. But it's still unclear as to how much of an impact airborne particles from the harmful algal bloom had on people breathing them in. For the rest of this hour, we're joined by FGCU researcher who is looking into this issue, Dr. Mike Parsons. He's a professor of marine science at Florida Gulf Coast University and the director of FGCU's Coastal Watershed Institute and Vester Field Station. Dr. Parsons, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
If you'd like to add your voice to our discussion, give us a call now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So for starters, you spent a lot of time in close proximity to the blue-green algae blooms yourself. Did you ever become symptomatic or have any issues?
No, I did not. Fortunately for me, I wasn't around it as long as other people, reporters, media, or even the residents who lived on the canals where it was really in large biomasses.
And you're there 24/7 if you live there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, unless you go to work. But anyway, so how did this pilot study come about?
Basically, people were voicing their concerns on, is it harmful to breathe in the fumes and things like that that were being given off by the blue-green algal blooms. And so there's various chemicals that are given off, including hydrogen sulfide, methane. There's chemicals that are also found in skunk spray. And so altogether, it basically gives a smell of raw sewage.
That's why it stinks so bad, the skunk spray.
Yeah, yeah. And so – you know, I wanted to look and see if there was any data on toxins that we know are present in these Microcystis blooms. That's the genus of this blue-green algae. And I wanted to see what work has been done looking at it in the air and in terms of aerosols and could people breathe it in. And what I found was even though some studies have detected the toxins in the air, there really was no conclusive evidence that people were being exposed to it or breathing it in.
Mm-hmm.
And so that led to some discussions with researchers and managers at NOAA as well as at the CDC to basically put together a pilot study that NOAA funded actually to see if we could detect the toxins in particles from the air. And if these particles – if they were detected on particles that were small enough that we could breathe them all the way down into our alveoli in our lungs. And so that was the big concern.
Nobody had ever looked at that before?
Not that I am aware of.
Because blue-green algae is kind of a thing. It's not just here. So I'm surprised that that's not been investigated by the CDC before.
They've looked at the toxins in the air and basically collected it in particles but not necessarily in terms of the size fractionations. So – for example, there are other researchers that are studying toxin exposure, taking swabs, nasal swabs, and oral swabs of people. And that tends to be where large particles collect. And so that's our first line of defense.
Yeah, your first filter, right?
Yeah, exactly, the first filter. But if there are smaller particles present, the smaller the particle is, the deeper in your lungs it can get. So if it can get all the way down to where your air sacs are, your alveoli, that's where you have your blood exchange.
That's where the exchange is, right?
That's where the toxin could then enter your bloodstream. So that was our concern.
So you found that it can get to the alveoli?
It is associated with particles that are small enough that would get to your alveoli, yes.
So what did you do? And I'm imagining because I'm not a scientist. Did you set up like a fake lung and suck in some air and see if it got there?
Well, we use these air samplers. They're called impactors and they have 6 to 8 filter sizes. And these different filter sizes basically represent different portions of your respiratory system. So basically from your mouth, your nasal cavity, trachea, upper bronchial passages, mid, lower bronchial passages, all the way down. And so the very smallest particles, the very smallest filters will basically filter out particles that are 0.4 microns in size. So that's – you're basically looking at more – well, smaller than a millionth of a meter, smaller than a bacteria cell.
Like the tiniest, tiniest funnel.
Yeah,
like exactly. You're getting down to the teeniest little thing.
Yeah.
And it can get there. But now what's next? Do you now have to see if the actual toxins are getting there or riding these little – bits that you saw that can get down there?
Well, we know the toxins are associated with those particles.
Okay.
So we know they can ride on it. What was interesting was we put out one of these air samplers at our Vester Field Station which has no cyanobacteria blooms nearby that we know of, and one at a residential house in Cape Coral on one of the canals where they did have the blue-green algal blooms. And we saw very low levels, which is good news, but they were present at both sites and they were equal. So we saw the same low levels at the Vestor control site and at the Cape Coral residential house. So I discussed this with colleagues at the CDC as well, and we think we might be looking at just normal background concentrations. And so what that tells us is we can detect it at very low background concentrations. Probably not harmful, but we have no idea. You know, this is probably
that has to be studied further.
Yeah, that's probably what everyone's been exposed to for as long as, you know, we know. So we have to do a follow-up study. And so
like, I'm wondering, like, if you set up something like, for example, maybe up in the middle of Vermont, would that have the same kind of levels? I mean, is this something that just happens to be around?
Exactly.
Could it be?
Exactly. And so there is a program called the Centers for Oceans and Human Health. We received funding here at FGCU to study ciguatera, which is a different kind of harmful algal bloom problem that we've talked about on this show. There's another Centers for Oceans and Human Health program out of Bowling Green University, and that's studying the cyanobacteria issues up on Lake Erie. So I'll be talking with them quite a bit and looking into their expertise and their experience in terms of what they think this finding would represent. And I'm talking with medical doctors as well as scientists who study respiratory exposure in humans. So this is really just the beginning in terms of trying to make sense of what it means, organizing and designing some follow-up studies to either reproduce the findings and or to expand them and see, you know, if we can see variability, can we see pulses during – one thing to keep in mind that I forgot to mention is we did this after the bloom. So
yeah,
the bloom was waning already. And by the time we collected the air samplers after 20 days, there was very little – blue-green algae left in the canal. So it was pretty much background, very low levels by then.
So it may be super aerosolized and in our environment as a result of that having been there in the canal, or it could just always have been around. That's just so interesting. Well, it's interesting because blue-green algae doesn't have that immediate response. It doesn't feel like you've been mildly pepper sprayed like with Red Tide.
No, but talking with people just anecdotally about their exposure, anything from news reporters to some of the residents, they've not felt well being around it and breathing it in too much and even exhibiting some kind of flu-like symptoms. So I'm not sure if that's just exposure to some of these different chemicals and the fumes and the volatile chemicals that are coming off the bloom, or if it would be a mild exposure to the toxin. But people said they didn't feel well, so there has to be a reason for that. And so, again, you know, we don't know exactly what's going on there, and that really does deserve more examination.
Well, it's interesting, too, because it could be something other than respiration, too. It could be absorption through, like, skin or just, like, contact. I mean, it could be in the air, get on the skin, and go that way.
Possibly. I'm not a medical doctor.
Yeah,
so
neither am I. I'm just guessing.
I know, you know, your skin is a very effective barrier for keeping chemicals out. And so when you get down into your lungs and your digestive system, you know, for example, with the discussions in the last piece about these toxins moving and other toxins moving into fish, biomagnification, a lot of that has to do with the digestive system, which is, you know, basically designed to allow nutrients, chemicals to go into the bloodstream.
Yeah.
Just like things get in your lungs, they're designed to have things pass
through, yeah.
And so, you know, that's why some people smoke cigarettes, for example.
Yeah.
You know, and so your skin is a barrier, though. So it won't really.
Less likely.
Exactly.
But as a marine science professor, did you ever think that you'd be on the front lines of such a serious potential health issue for humans?
Not necessarily, but I have a lot of experience studying harmful algal blooms in general. And the big concern in the public is the human health threat that these various organisms represent. And so we're always aware of walking a fine line between we've you know, we've detected this toxin, this could be a threat, and making sure we don't sensationalize it and scare everybody.
Yeah, that's
– So it's a pretty – it can be a fine line where we're like, this is an important finding. You know, you don't have to go and buy a scuba tank and, you know, breathe through the regulator and never breathe regular air or live in a bubble or anything like that. But these are some things we should follow up on.
Well, it's hard though when people are scared.
Yes.
And when, you know, for example, a bird's falling out of the sky, everybody wants to immediately say what they think it is, but we're still waiting on tissue samples to determine what exactly it is that's impacting these birds and what exactly is happening with these harmful algal blooms and those toxins when we're breathing them or being around them,
waiting
on the science to tell you what is really going on instead of just relying on anecdotal. It's kind of hard to be patient, though.
Yes, I agree.
A lot of a lot of pressure on you.
Yeah.
Hey, science person, tell us everything. Have we gotten any results back on the people that were taking like the nasal swabs and things and that first filter?
I've only seen what has been released through the media,
mm-hmm.
and they have detected. They were looking at a different toxin than microcystins.
Okay,
they were looking at BMAA, and that's another compound that's a big concern. And we're preparing to analyze the rest of our samples for BMAA. But just reading in the news, for example, they did detect it in nasal swabs and mouth swabs, throat swabs, I guess.
Which, like you said, would make sense. That's the first line of defense.
I think they took blood and urine samples, and I haven't heard anything about results from that.
All right. So what's next for your study? You said you're going to look for BMAA?
So the two air samplers that we put out previously, our pilot study, we have material left that we can go back and look for BMAA. So we're waiting to do that. We had to order special analysis kits, and we're waiting for those to come in and then do the analysis. We're hoping to have it done before Christmas break when the students, you know, all leave for home and family. And then we're trying to organize a conference call to see what's next in terms of redeploying the samplers and how we want to do it. Do we want to do it for another 20 days? Do we want to do a shorter time, different places?
Or stick them on the shores of Lake O.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the time that we have for today's show, but I want to thank my guest, Dr. Mike Parsons. He's a professor of marine science at Florida Gulf Coast University. I really appreciate you coming in and talking with us.
Sure, no problem.
I know you want to get back to the lab and finish all those studies up. Thanks so much.
All right. You're welcome.
The first part of today's show was preempted a little bit by the funeral of former President George H.W. Bush. So if you'd like to hear what you missed, you can tune into our re-air tonight at 9 o'clock p.m. or just find the segment posted at gulfcoastlive.org. Our show today was produced by Mike Canary and myself. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.